Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Crumpets, the wait is over, and it's finally time for episode 12 of No Small Questions. I'm Question Master and OG superfan Sam Oakes, and I'm prepped and ready to grill these No Small Roles cast members with your delicious queries. Right, that's my intro out of the way, so it's time to introduce our stars. First up, she's the badass granny of the group, the one and only gnome slash flower petal slash walrus. It's Juna Septhorn, or in this case, the wonderful Vicky Gaskin.
Hello!
Hello! Oh, really exciting. Okay. But there's more to come. Right. Our other guest tonight offers us spoons in one hand and darkness and despair in the other. He's the one knotting all of these strings and keeping us on the edge of our seats. It's our dungeon master, Bebe David Knight.
Hi.
Hello.
That's it. That's all I got.
Yeah, that's all I've got as well. I'm done now.
Yeah, this is it. We're done for the
it's
day.
It's all you.
Well, I just peeked on my hello, so...
Oh, God.
What, is in sound waves or you're done
both.
Now? As in,
oh,
that's your
I'm
energy
done.
Level.
I'm going to move away from my mic.
Back into the darkness. As always, guys, we have some of our gorgeous patrons in the chat with us tonight, and we have some listener questions from the No Small Roles social media and our Discord chat. But before we begin, it's time for your spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert!
These questions tonight, they include spoilers for all the episodes up to and including episode 55. So if you haven't caught up yet, we recommend you go do that now, and then we'll catch up with you later. Okay, all that being said, let's crack on with some questions and spill some Twaintide. Are we ready to jump right in, guys?
Yeah!
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it. I don't know.
Not sure.
I don't know.
I guess we'll find out. Well, you can work on this one together because it is for both of you. This is from Kit, who has asked, if you could get any of Juna's tattoos, which would you get? I think it makes sense to ask this to Vicky first. Vicky is the one who has the list of tattoos.
I was going to say, if you could list them out,
the body
be
of tattoos.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it would help David.
So I'm needle phobic.
Oh, really?
So
okay, how about like a transfer then?
Disposable,
or a henna?
I suddenly realise having a massively tattooed character is really like...
It's one of those that it's not like a life aspiration moment.
I'd have to get the seven petal flower if I was going to choose a tattoo for sure.
Nice. You wouldn't get the golems one then?
Oh, I don't know. That would remind me not to take life too seriously. Maybe I'd get the flower with golems sound fun. Just that bit.
You could get it like in the petals, maybe?
Yeah.
Like the message. Just put it like the writing on the leaves or something.
Yeah, golems sound fun. Golem sound fun! Exclamation mark.
I love the way that you're like terrified of needles, and yet in over the course of this podcast, including bonus content, you've chosen two characters that are like heavily into needles.
Yep.
A face of fear, I suppose.
A psychologist would have a field day with that, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Is it a way of working through it in your own sort of? It's a safe.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. The last 3 injections I haven't fainted on, so maybe it's doing some good.
It's working.
Oh, it's nice. Working, yay. Maybe, yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Oh, God, so when they were saying there's the vaccinations coming up soon, you were just like, oh, God.
Oh, it
was
bad.
I'll just get COVID. Yeah.
I was also working in a GP centre that were doing the vaccinations.
Oh,
so
God.
Both times it was like, okay, come on now. We're going to take you into this room and vaccinate you.
Do you get funny when you see other people getting
injections?
Even talking
about it is not great.
Really? Oh, wow. Oh, God. Okay, moving swiftly on. David, if you could choose a tattoo, maybe Vicky, if you could remind us which tattoos there are.
Yeah.
Basically anything June has ever experienced. So there's all of the different schools of magic. There's like moments from her past. There's motivational quotes from Ginger.
So there's the wood carver as well.
Do you have the Fox Koi Blossom?
Fox Koi Blossom will definitely be on there.
I think that's what I would
get. That's a new lore drop. I don't think she's told that story yet.
Is she not?
I don't think we've heard that. No.
Well, in which case,
this is an exclusive.
It's up to you whether or not you explain that, but I think I'd get the Fox Koi Blossom.
Yeah, I will explain it. I think people who are listening to No Small Questions deserve to know things before everyone else, right?
Yes, please. Yeah.
So Fox Koi Blossom, I won't tell you the story because I don't have it up in front of me, but is another of Juna's stories. But it's based off of a game that was created in the Barg epic, which David has been telling on the Patreon content recently, which you should definitely read because it's awesome. And it's like rock, paper, scissors. But so the fox, and for everyone who's listening, I'm currently making...
She's doing like a sock puppet hand.
Puppet hand, thank you. Yeah. So fox...
Or a goose.
It's a fox.
It's a goose fox, yeah.
It's a fox. The fox eats the koi. I'm currently making a fish shape with my other hand. Then the koi eats the blossom. Imagine Joey Tribbiani doing fire in Friends. So the koi eats the blossom, and the blossom poisons the fox.
Oh.
So it's a game for deciding what you're going to do next that is used by the Sekaiji, I want to say,
right.
Down in the south. Yeah.
So it's kind of like rock, paper, scissors, but much better.
But in game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Just cool. Yeah, we'll play that later.
Yeah, but there's a story that goes with it.
So is it like a circle of imagery, or will we find out about this later in the episode?
That's sort of all there really is to it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's just a game.
Yeah. So yeah, you'd be like, Fox Koi Blossom. And then like, if I've got my fox up, and you've got your blossom out, then the blossom has poisoned the fox, and so you win. Whereas if you did blossom and I did koi, the koi would eat the blossom, and so I would win, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. So yeah, the fox koi blossom tattoo is what baby David would have, and how would you like that applied? We're not doing needles today.
I mean, I don't mind having the needle. I'm not needle phobic. I mean, I don't like them, but I'm not phobic.
Okay, we'll do that so long as Vicky's not in the room.
Exactly.
It's where Juna will do it.
Juna will do it.
There.
I'll get that's the thing. I'll get Juna
Hang
to do it. She can make her own inks, and then we'll do it that way. Because that way it's also imaginary, and I don't actually have to go through the process. So.
No, I'm making notes for when we get really drunk and go get tattoos. Okay, moving on. The next question, I'm going to take a seat back here because we've got a patron in the chat who would like to ask this one. So Tiamat, it is over to you.
Hi, everyone.
Hiya.
This is for you, Vicky. Now that Juna's met another petal, is she considering a tattoo for the occasion? And given David's amazing descriptions, what possible designs would she be thinking of?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's a good question.
I think definitely she's going to colour in one of the petals. I think that's got to happen, hasn't it?
Oh, nice.
And I feel like if she had to colour it a colour, Kied is quite like, I think like a sort of orange colour. So she'd definitely be doing that. Oh, but Kieda, like...
I was weirdly picturing him as a kind of like yellowy orange.
Oh, wow.
Without intending to.
Is that
it translated.
Something Australia, maybe? Like, does that
just
because
he's
orange in some way?
Yeah. Oh,
he's,
wow.
He just comes across as like an orangey kind of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yellowy orange. Oh, but he does oh my god, where he turns into other things, doesn't he?
Like illusions.
Illusions.
Yeah. Mm.
So maybe like a tattoo where it looks like it's him, but then like it also looks like it's Juna, maybe. Like, so they're like dotted lines or in different colours or something.
Oh, I like that.
Cool. I felt like the answer had to be like deserving of the question. It's a really good question.
That is a good question. I hope that's satisfactory answer that, there for you.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. Sorry, I just muted because I didn't want a sound coming in.
Cheers, Tiamma. Thank you very much. Look forward to another question later on. Okay, the next question we have is from Ross Meikle Rise with Treacle, who has asked, you mentioned the Twain Tide... sorry, I should say this is for David.
Okay.
you mentioned the Twain Tide Tea Tournament was inspired by a replay of Pokemon Blue. Awesome. What's your favourite Pokemon game? Who's your favourite Pokemon? What other video games might have inspired elements of No Small Roles? And unrelated... Please, can Baby David just spend some time in the NSQ speaking as Kyoda? Thanks.
Yay!
Yes, okay. To all the above.
Should I just give this entire answer as Kyoda?
Yay!
Yes, please. So, favorite Pokemon game?
Okay, favorite Pokemon game, right? It's probably, I think it is Pokemon Blue still, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just probably, just dive for it, you know? Like those original... I'll say two or three because, like, you've got to count yellow in there. And obviously, green was released in Japan, but then it was kind of just changed color when it was over here. But anyway, is for like favorite Pokemon? Like, I don't know if this is like basic bitch of me, but Flareon is like it.
Mm.
Like, I love Eevee. I love all the evolutions. I'm down for all of that. But Flareon.
Jolteon for me.
Just looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
Jolteon? Nah, get out of here, mate. Bit spiky.
Spiky and cool.
Nah, you
loved
want,
it.
You want
it
a fluffy
like
warm.
Eevee.
You want a fluffy warm Eevee. That's what you want. You want your Flareon. Yeah.
did any other video games, Kyoda, inspire elements of No Small Roles?
Right. Well, I mean, I quite like playing a lot of games, so I feel like whatever it is I'm playing at the time, just like here's some like inspiration into the game. Like all of your classics, like your Skyrims, your Dragon Age, obviously they got the kind of like influence, but what have I played recently? God of War, the latest God of War, that's great.
Mm.
I'm playing Cyberpunk 2077 at the moment. It's glitchy as anything, but I'm getting there. Yeah, right. Slowly and surely I'm getting there. Yeah, I don't know if there's like a specific thing. I'm going to stop talking like this. I'm annoying myself with this voice.
Oh no, I was enjoying it. No.
We're
for the rest
it,
of
baby
the
D.
Rest of the
I
show,
feel like,
please.
I feel like he sits too comfortably in my mouth, this kid. And if I don't put him down, he's going to take over and just start talking absolute shite. So I need to put him in a box and keep it in his box. Like, calm yourself, mate.
I have to ask, actually, just based on what you were saying then, were some of the outbursts that you kind of came out with as Kyoda because of the accent, is that what did it to you? You were just kind of like enjoying being in that moment, so those words came out?
In trying to decide, to talk about Kyoda for a bit, in trying to decide who he was, I took Juna's like chaotic personality and I was like, how else can you express that? And I was like, oh, okay, well, if he's... like super chatty and like really like in that same friendly way that Juna has, like she'll start a conversation with anyone and like really get into it if left alone. I was like, that's the kind of person that he is as well, as a kind of reflection of her. But at the same time, he doesn't have a filter, just like if he is in a conversation, to let other people talk, and he will just blurt out whatever has come into his head.
I got real kind of similar to like Alfie, like, and I think Robbie, they spoke about this last time, like ADHD and like that kind of like, you know, you're either fixated on something or your mind's kind of like all over the room. That's kind of what I got from Kira. I'm glad that some of those things were down to the accent as well. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, and I did, I don't know if I've talked about this. I feel like I've talked about it on No Small Talk, which is our little Patreon after episode stuff. But I was torn between what accent to put him in, whether or not to go the Aussie route or do a like an Irish-inspired accent, but I just couldn't hold the Irish accent
good enough or long enough or well enough. So I was like, well, I can sit in the Aussie one for... I mean, it's like, I do apologize to all Australians out there, because I know I'm probably like swapping over to New Zealand and probably a bit of South African like dropped in there a little bit as well. I apologize. This is like Southern Hemisphere type voice. This is not. But I could just maintain that one longer, so I kept it.
He would have been a completely different character in Irish, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, he was instantly lovable.
That's, do you know what, that's the other thing about an Australian accent as well. It is, it's just quite, it's just, it's friendly, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just a friendly accent.
Which is how you play an evil person. I'm watching you, David. I'm watching you. Who knows what side of the flower this guy is on?
I mean, looking at Juno.
Yeah, right. Ross Meikle, Ryan Spatrickle, I really hope that, that, was that enough Australian or do we think we need more? Yeah, it's borderline. If you could just throw a couple more in there, David, a bit later on, that'd be great.
If we end up talking about petals and things, then I'll bring him out. But
all right, that sounds good.
Let me rest.
Okay, next question for both of you from Matt Hudson, who has asked, how do you work together to balance the scales of elements that go into Juno's character and the story? It's a lot of history, mythology, and secrets. So how much of that game chat does it require and how much is able to unfold in the story? So yeah, you guys kind of cooking behind the scenes and working out things or you know, how much of this has been established or and how much of it is just kind of like unraveling as you play?
Well, I sort of had some ideas, if you don't mind me sort of starting.
Go for it.
I feel,
yeah.
So I had some very specific ideas about Juno. Like the seven petaled flower stuff and sort of who Juno is. But I kind of like the idea of kind of like the sort of not knowing and the sort of anything could happen. I quite like that free fall kind of feeling, which is why a lot of Juno's spells are like rolling the dice and choosing between a bunch.
Mm.
And David and I've obviously played a lot of D&D together and I do trust him as much as I give you grief for killing everyone. So I sort of had all of these ideas and said, I'm quite happy to make decisions, but I'm also quite happy to give it over to you. So, you know, as everything that is unfurling is unfurling, like a lot of the sort of the mythology behind the flower is now completely out of my hands.
Interesting.
And it's quite terrifying. So it's something that, yeah, that I really wanted to do, but David has taken that over as god of the world.
We had a really fun early conversation where I was like, okay, so how much does Juno know? How much does she not know? And I think you said something along the lines of, well, this is what she's been told. But that's, she doesn't know how much of it is true. And like, and that is such a, like, that is a gift for a DM to be,
yeah,
like,
yeah, I was going to say,
okay,
you're just like mine.
Yeah. To be like, well, like, yeah, like here's the framework of information, but like, what is the secret behind it? Is there a secret behind it? Or is everything on the surface what it is?
I don't know anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the most interesting parts of that episode was just being like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, this is sounding really, really dodgy at this point. And was that the same for you there, Vicky? Like playing that moment of being like, oh God, like I built this character around this philosophy. I've been flower checking, and it could be like all some kind of cult or
Juno's
weird, or
not
just
even
nothing
nearly
at
there.
All?
I think like do you know the film Never Let Me Go?
I haven't seen it myself, but...
Andrew Garfield, Keira Knightley film, and I love the idea that like there's this real like belief in what they're sort of raised to do, which is essentially be sort of clones for human organ harvesting, and that they're like, well, this is my life, so this is what I'm gonna do. That may or may not be a spoiler. Spoiler alert! But like that sort of that
is David after your organs. What the hell?
But I think as well, like I was raised with no religion, which I didn't realise was quite unusual until I was an adult. And so I think there's part of me that's intrigued into the idea of sort of having that deep rooted belief in something. And I think for Juna, like, I'm going, I don't know what David is doing with this, but Juna is not even close to doubting Ginger as far as I'm concerned yet. You know, there might be things that come up like after this is aired that make her doubt it. But, you know, it's that idea that, like, if you've been raised with this very strong idea of, you know, she's been taken from her family.
Mm-hmm.
She's been raised by this woman who has been her sort of new replacement soul family, who has taught her everything she knows, her entire belief system, all of the skills that she has. Like, you know, Juna isn't sure if she would have any magic if it wasn't for this sort of belief system. Yeah. And so I think it'll be interesting for me as Juna to work out, like, if there is that crunch point and if so, where that is. And, like, I mean, I'm saying I don't want to give David ideas, but I'm sure he has the, like, whatever's going to happen. But, like, when does the belief system cross purposes with who Juna is within the story that we're telling?
Mm.
And, like I say, I quite kind of enjoy the free fall and the sort of chaos of that. And, like, I don't know what's going to happen. And I like that. And I trust David. I trust him.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
We have had a suggestion in the chat from Tiamat, who's just said that Ginger is the big bad.
She could be.
What's she been doing in that other region?
I'm so excited to meet Ginger, because Ginger, again, was a character that I, you know, sort of created and then obviously handed her over to
Party... very interested in meeting Ginger at this point as well. You know, when she finally gets there,
yeah.
The idea of her running an entire region. It's like, I'm 4 weeks away of continuous running day and night. Oh,
but
God.
Also what we must remember is Juna has learnt her charisma from Ginger, so...
Well, that, I mean, I've got to say, that's what's interesting about the fact that you are you're a sorcerer, is that it comes from, like, you know, that font of magic comes from something within you. So this tattoo, this marking that you both share, like, you know, that is where I imagine that this power comes from. So it's like, you know, she's harnessed this power. My wondering is, like, whether the intentions behind it all are pure. And also, where's Basil? That's another thing I want to know. But maybe I'll save that for a super fan chats for us all to talk about. But I don't know that Basil's still around.
Maybe we should have another, like, one shot mm-hmm. or like a side quest where we follow Kieda.
Ooh. Shotgun.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I'll DM, because Kieda will have to do something in that one. Right, speaking of taking the reins, I'm going to follow on with a question that I have for you, Vicky, which is related to the one that Matt has just asked. Because are there parts of Juna and her backstory that you haven't yet revealed to the party? I'm not asking you to tell us now if there are. Or are you playing her as a complete open book?
Hey, good pun.
Sorry about the pun. You've got to be in there.
Cheeky little plug. Yeah, there are things.
And that was very quick. Okay, yeah. Moving on.
I don't think, like, not major things, not like actually she's, like, evil or anything like that that I know of.
I was going to say, we don't know.
But yeah, there's bits about her past that could come up.
And are you,
little tidbits.
Are you holding those cards close to your chest? Is there, like, a... Are these things that Juna wouldn't want to get out, or do you think that they're things that will kind of work their way out as the story goes on?
Juna's told her big secret. So, like, it's just no one's asked the right questions.
Yeah, that's changed his mind. Now you're the big bad. Brilliant.
Me and Orin were in cahoots from the start.
Yeah, what did you do
in
Tomorrow?
Funny how the two of us were with Enkidu and he was the one that died.
You've been pretending this whole time.
I mean, technically, Juna's died. Maybe she made a deal with the Shrouded Kral. Lady. Yeah, with Kral. Oh, God.
Oh, she's still got his finger around her neck.
Oh, God. Don't say that.
He's dead, yo. It's fine. Oh, you can't resurrect someone with just a finger, can you?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. True resurrection. Just got
right,
a diamond.
You just don't know any super strong wizards yet, so it's fine.
No, but Fallos Vale is probably where you're going to find those.
Oh, the Arcanist Consortium. Oh, yeah. Mm.
God. Is it about to get dark? Sorry, this isn't a question in here, but I need to know. Is it about to get really, really dark?
So
I'm worried.
We've recorded up to 61, is it?
Mm-hmm.
So we're about 6 episodes ahead of what's been released.
Okay. I already heard from a cast member that something horrible happens to them.
It's pretty fun, is what I'm going to say. It's pretty fun. What happens? I'm obviously not going to tell you anything. Yeah, I'm just saying that we've had a lot of fun over these last 6 episodes.
Yeah.
Oh, God. The fun in quotation marks, right? It's been fun.
But it's been a bit of both.
Okay.
It's David who is the one who has said the word fun.
So long as you're having fun, David, and hopefully we will as listeners. But yeah, I just got this sense like that even with like little tidbits of, ooh, is this really a good thing what they're chatting about here? It's kind of like I felt like something is coming and you keep putting in these little plugs every now and then that I just feel like we're about to get another Wingthrop arc where it's just like horrible but still enjoyable. Let's look forward to that and let's move on to another question. So we've got one here, another one for Vicky. This one is from Jeremy. Yay. Jeremy Cobb, our Dwayne Fabulosa, who has asked, have you found it easier or more difficult to balance the mechanical aspects of the game with the character storytelling aspects of the game as Juna has gotten more powerful over the course of the show? And I don't know if I read that properly. Anyway, have you ever wanted to multi-class Juna based on her character growth and backstory?
I try and ignore as much of the mechanics as I can.
Nice.
While still playing by the rules. So yeah, no, she's quite straightforward. I much prefer the more character-driven elements of D&D to the mechanical side. But getting new spells is fun. And once I worked out metamagic, it was like plain sailing from there.
It's a game changer, isn't it?
Yeah. And with regards to multi-classing, because Juna is a, let me get this right, divine sorcerer?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Divine soul, yeah.
Divine soul. I don't think I, as an individual, are ready for multi-classing just yet. But I think that being a divine soul, it's not multi-classing, but she does lean towards the cleric. And obviously she can have like cleric and sorcerer spells, which is timely that he's asked this question, because I have found the longer that we've been playing, the more I am drawn to the cleric spell list than the sorcerer spell list. And I don't know why. But I think like it's interesting. And I did look at like what you get at base level cleric and was like, should I be doing that? Like do I need to have a like one-on-one with David and like work out how that would happen? And I looked at it and went, actually I think it wouldn't be that different to how I work Juna.
I think the tricky thing you'd find is that sorcerers are charisma based, but cleric spells are wisdom. Yeah. So you'd have to like
bump up my wisdom.
Bump up your wisdom to make your cleric spells. But then at the same time, because you've got access to them as a divine soul sorcerer anyway, you can kind of just sneak them in with your charisma instead.
Yeah. I hadn't really, because I don't tend to think about the mechanics. What you said. Yeah. And there's a new spell that I've just got on my last level up, which is from the cleric list, which I'm very excited about. Which even in the episodes that we've like recorded, I haven't used it yet, have I, Bebedee? We had a bit of a chat about it.
No, you haven't used it yet.
I do love the cleric spell list as well, because you kind of think cleric, you think healing and all of that, but no, they've got some real fuck people over spells, which the sorcerer just doesn't have that access to.
Real like drama. There's much more like ritual, you know.
Okay.
I mean, I'm really intrigued what the spell is now. I'm trying to work out based
it's
on the
ritual.
Level that you are now. Oh right. Okay.
That was a little clue.
I'm sorry. It was a late night. picking up on these little drops.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
But there's an element of ritual that it's acknowledged some places and not the others. So I said I only want ritual if David would let me
ceremony.
Have.
Is it called ceremony?
No. Sorry, it's not ritual. It's ceremony is the one, which was really cool and really exciting.
Yeah. There's so much you can do with that spell, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well, we've kind of mechanics was mentioned in the question. Do you remember like what the bits that are? Because I can't think of the spell off the top of my head. I don't think I ever got to that high level cleric in my campaign. But what kind of thing are we looking at here?
So there's lots of elements of ceremony. This is like a bit of a spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert!
Because it will come up at some point in the show, but it's fine. You can make someone come of age. You can marry people, thing. Yeah. But there's one I can't remember. In one book, you can basically
I just pulled it up. It's in the Unearthed Arcana.
That's the one.
It's got Investiture, and it says you touch one willing humanoid, choose one first level spell you have prepared, and expend a spell slot and any material components as if you were casting that spell. The spell has no effect. Instead, the target can cast this spell once without having to expend a spell slot or use material components. If the target doesn't cast the spell within 1 hour, the invested spell is lost.
So things like you can chuck a fifth level fireball and then just be like, here you go, Gwen, run over there. Oh, sorry, Kyhilda, run over there. And if you're in a bad spot, you just do that and
but what
petticoat
that's
going to
mean
away.
For Juna is she's going to tattoo the spell onto someone just for flavour. So she tattoos that spell and then they have it for an hour and then the tattoo fades. Which is something we've been talking about for
really
a while,
cool.
haven't we, David? Like about how I could get a spell like that and then I found it.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Okay, amazing.
But only some places acknowledge it and so...
Yeah, and I'm happily
permission.
Accepting the acknowledgement of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
The funny thing is, you've told us about this and I'm excited, but it's possibly going to be 2 months until I hear this content and you get into that point, depending on where it is in six episodes.
And even where we've recorded, no one in the cast, I don't think, knows that yet.
Oh, interesting. Well, here you go, guys. You've got this coming up.
Yeah.
Grace, you're going to get a fireball. Yay, yeah. Okay, Jeremy, you've given us some dishy information there.
Good question.
Yeah, great question. The next one is for you, David. It's from Karen. Do you have something do you have something like clocks in the background for events happening elsewhere in the world? Because this is something that we talked about in Superfan Chats, the idea that everything keeps running, right? Yeah. Do you have clocks in the background for events happening elsewhere in the world? E.g., the campaign for the throne, the faceless footman. How do you keep track of the world as the party goes forward? And the related question from Jeremy, we will get to in a minute. But first part, Karen, let's... let's open that up, David.
How do I keep track of things in the background? It's mostly every time they either get to a town or are leaving a town, I kind of have a check-in of what elements I can use and then kind of figure out. It's not I've not written out timelines for every storyline. Let's put it that way, for every background thing. Just every time they get to a location or are leaving that location, I check in and go, right, what threads have I got that I can pull in? What makes sense to be here? So when they were in Medrivane, for instance, obviously the Twain Tide Tea Tournament was based there to begin with. So I was here's a starting point for that. So there'd be some games in the town. Great. But then after the conversation with Robbie in trying to decide their character and how that was going to fit in, I was oh, cool. So the Hex are also in Medrivane, which makes sense because of the carts leaving Rost Hall. I was oh, so that's where they were headed. Great. I can tie some of that in. So yeah. And then obviously knowing that the Hex was there, I was what's happened to the Hex since we last saw them and kind of bump their activity along in that way. And yeah, in the same way that when then the party leaves a place, I'm cool, travel in D&D can be quite slow and random encounter. So I just those random encounters to be part of the world building. and like give information in different ways. So the travel down from Medrivane to Vernock Rise, I was like, oh, cool. So let's have a bit of the like political stuff going on. The Tymon Prevost caravan coming through. That. That's
another
like
another classic chatty character.
Exactly. So yeah, in that way, I was like, okay, well, let's look at the world stage. What's happening and how can that interact directly with the party? But then it also means that because, again, this party does not seem to stay in one location for more than... You gave them spoons, mate.
They
were traveling. So that means that it's like there's a constant check in every like three or four episodes as to like how everything's moved along and whether or not anything that the party have done in that time have affected everything. So it's more that than a timeline-based plan, if that makes sense.
I should actually read what Jeremy put because it's kind of a rewording of the question as well. But, you know, he asked it, so I should ask it as well. From time to time, we'll see glimpses of larger ongoing events and storylines that are going on in the world around the party. Do you, as DM, have regular world-building check-ins to make sure the rest of the world keeps running independently of the party, or do you just develop these storylines when it's time for the party to encounter one of them again? So, a little bit of a previous answer.
Yeah,
exactly. I had it in my head that there was like a Back to the Future bit, you know, when Doc Brown is, spoilers. When Doc Brown is like, alternate 1975, and you know, and you're like, Tymon Prevost is here, and like, this is going on. I'm gesturing madly right now. But yeah, I was going to save that bit to the end, and then I realized that it's just Jeremy elegantly saying, a similar thing.
So it is basically the check-ins. I do check-ins. But it's always based on when the party are arriving or leaving somewhere, if that makes sense. Because then I can plan out the journey ahead of them or all of the things that they might encounter in that location. Because this party are very fun in that when they get somewhere, they don't always... I might lay a little obvious road for them and then they're like, nah.
Who was the guy we bumped into when we got to the place with the library? And I think Ben even said like, you can take that story hook. Yeah. And we just like...
Yeah, Jerick stepping up being Jerick, like, oh, hey, it, hey guys, shady guy. And I'm like, hook, hook, hook. And they're like, nah, you said the word hex. Goodbye.
Is it just a way of like, you know, poking them and just being like, yeah, just remember that this is going on. Don't forget that, guys, because I'm going to mess you up with it later.
That's the other fun thing is that I've tried as much as possible not to introduce... I mean, there is a lot going on in the world. But I've tried to connect it to certain stories. So there's like the political thing going on. There's the like the conspiracy of the founders going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's this like petal storyline that's starting to bubble away underneath. That it's like these, it basically everything ties in some way or other to... There's the hex, obviously. There's the
mirrors. There's the circles.
Yeah.
There's
all of these knotted strings,
yeah.
Guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's just like, as long as it ties, as when I create something, I'm trying to make it in some way tie into one of these bigger storylines so that it still feels like they're moving forward rather than trying to introduce something completely new and separate every time. That makes sense. There's a few things that are new.
I refer you all back to, if you don't join our Patreon, so you can read David's story.
Yeah,
story of the Borg anthology, mm-hmm. where it all, like, everything is intertwined and you're like, no!
Yeah, that's how I like my stories.
It's
massively complicated.
Well, I'd love to spend a day in David's head and also hate it.
Right?
Yeah.
there's a couple more questions for you, David, that are on a similar theme. One of them is, in fact, the next one is from me, based on story. So how much has your original story changed through collaborative play? Are there any story ideas that you've had to eliminate?
Oh, that is good.
Thank you. I want to know.
Yeah, the overarching mysteries... the main points are set in stone, but some of the details have been shifted, if that makes sense. So basically anything that I've said right at the beginning of the campaign will still be true when we get to the end. Like, that's set in stone, but then some of the like smaller details as I've gone along have shifted based on what the party have done and like new ideas that they've given me that I'm like, oh, that would be so cool to tie this in this way and that kind of thing. So some of the smaller details, have shifted slightly.
But none of the big major things did you, like, you no. had your,
yeah,
like,
I was like,
the
here's,
end
here's
idea.
The core,
yeah.
Here are the core facts. And as long as everything else dances around those, then it should hopefully make logical sense by the end. It's not, I'm going to get to the end and they'll be like, oh, of course, nothing was real at all. Like, it's not quite like that. Or, he was a pony the entire time.
Like, it's all Bessie's dream.
It's all Bessie's dream. Like, I'm not, it's not going to be that kind of story, unfortunately, for everybody. Spoiler.
Have you been tempted, though, at any point to, like, change those big plot points because of, like, things that the players give you that you're like, oh, yeah, I could tweak it in that way, but you're committed at that point.
Definitely tempted. It's yeah, I've tried not to as much as possible, though. Just to keep some logical consistency and to keep an ongoing, to make it feel like one story and not make it feel like, do you know what I don't want it to feel like? I don't want it to feel like the Game of Thrones series,
right,
where, you know, they got to the end of the books and they were like, oh cool, we know the plot point, so let's go off and make it up. And then those last couple of series, you're just sat there like, this feels like a different story now. Like, it's not where you were going to begin with. And so I've tried to keep it as like, here's where we're going. And yeah, the tracks might move around a little bit, but like, the end point is hopefully, well, I mean, I don't know where it's going to end, but the facts of the end are going to be the same regardless of what the party do.
So there's a chance that we could actually, if we listen back really carefully, we can figure out everything about this story.
Yeah.
I find that very cycle of strings, baby. Uh-huh. David. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But like, whether or not, again, through everybody's actions, whether or not that's what happens.
Yeah.
I think this party are very fun to play with. I really love how everybody will throw me a curveball at any given point. And I'm like, okay, cool. So how does that make sense in with these, like, in these stones, you know?
Because, yeah, do they like do that with backstory as well? This is another thing I'm wondering. Like, when people coming out with like backstory things and stuff like that, is this all stuff that you knew, or are these like curveballs that you're talking about where it's like, oh, actually, okay, I need to work out how that works within my background lore and stuff?
Yeah, I think everybody's backstories, we all had big, nice big session zeros to begin with. I think they were like 2 to 3 hours, some of them. Lovely big one-on-one conversations. So we all knew what the grounding for every character was. But then like extra facts have come along, like Juna's tattoos, for instance. In our very first chat, they weren't there, were they?
Nope. I just one day was like, I think it would be really cool if she had like loads of tattoos,
yeah,
to cover up the fact that she was born with this mark. And then I came to David and was like, I think it'd be really cool if she could have a spell, which meant that she tattooed people. This was at like level one. And he was like, all in good time. Like,
yeah, I was going to say.
Not yet.
At the moment, you can just about fire a bow.
Yeah.
Actually, this links really nicely with a question that we got from Mike C here, which is, what was the last thing the players did that surprised you? Which is kind of what we're talking about here. But also, have you had to silently scream as they've missed something that was important? I love this question, by the way, Mike.
I think we might be in tomorrow.
Oh no, I did love that moment. And it's, listening back, my responses of like, yep, the weather is exactly the same.
I know, it's so good on a second, third, fourth lesson, isn't it? It just never gets old.
Never gets old. What have they done recently that's made me act like that? I can't think. I can think of a moment, but it is not, I think it's in episode 58 or 9, so I'm not going to mention it. But it wasn't so much that it like, It's just a really fun character moment, essentially. And I was like, I'm just going to let this play out. I don't know. This isn't, again, like, I've not got this written down anywhere. Let's just let this play out. But I do really love when that happens. I feel like any DMs out there will probably know that, like, DMing when you've written a story plan, I mean, if you're making it up on the fly, it's crazy fun. But when you've written a story plan and everyone follows it, you're like, cool, we walked through the story together, great. But players the whole time are experiencing this entirely new story and they're having to just react on the fly. So I feel like when players do something that forces the story out of the plan, the DM like has the chance to experience that, like, oh cool, this I suppose is what's happening in the moment type feeling. So I really love it when that happens. As for silently screaming, yep. That happens. Mostly, I think it was on the last super fan chats. The party has a real tendency to like get into something and go, "That's a bit big for us."
Yeah,
and
yeah,
walk away.
And run away.
They go,
every time.
This is not something we can deal with at our current level. Cool. Well, let's make sure we're safe, and we'll figure it out later.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Again, there's a massive golem army just under a forest, and they went, "We are not in a position. We are not in a position." And, like, I love that that's how they play it. Like, they...
That's what happens when you've already killed 3 out of 5 of the party.
Yeah.
I just, like, Medrivane as well is like, "Oh, yeah, there's another thing. But we've kind of burned down this whole bit of the city. We should just go."
Again, like... nobody would have known that it was them that... But if they'd run off to the other side, nobody would have known it was them that started a fire. The Hex maybe might have, like, tried coming after them, but they were like, "Nah, we're out." Just watch this city
we're
burn.
We're supposed to be undercover, people.
I love that Ben has put in the chat as well, "We have a long to-do list. There was another spoon to get."
There was another spoon. An entire other spoon.
Oh, God. Okay, I love that.
I still stand. We could not defeat a golem army.
No, I think, again, I think it was the right choice to make. Like, but at the same time, it's just lots of fun to be like, well, I've got like... the little bit of planning for what happens if you wanted to. Do you don't want to? You sure? Okay, cool.
Do you know, I wonder if there was a part of like the whole, you know, okay, let's, the one time that they did really push further, i.e. the advancement test, it really burnt them.
I mean, it is partly my fault in that. I do scare them.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay. Great question there, Mike.
Vicky, is there anything that I've done that's made you silently scream?
Okay.
I really like this question.
When you killed me.
Yeah, I mean, fair.
I was... Oh. There were all sorts of feelings that day. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, we lived it. And, it, you know, it's why we make the joke, like, Juna dies.
Juna
like,
dies.
I don't know if you've listened to that back and, like, heard the, like, venom in my voice of, like, I've created this character that I love and now she's dead.
Yeah. And it was so early on as well and we'd spent so long prepping and then we just got, episode 8 and I was like, cool.
I mean, Ruana dying, I still kind of haven't forgiven you for. She was an awesome character.
Well,
she
was
very cool, but now she
travels
with you.
That was your fault as well, gonna say.
Yeah. I mean, but, well, yeah.
You kind of let him there. I mean, yeah, anyway.
I do feel really sad that, like, that she had to die.
Yeah.
I suppose the thing is, Vicky, you don't really silent scream. You audibly scream when these things happen. Yeah. I mean, there was the whole thing of, you know, when you met Kierda at the end of that particular episode and the whole flower thing happened and you were screaming with, with joy and enthusiasm in the same way that you scream at Dwayne, you know, when you're annoyed at him. Yeah. So I think, yeah.
It's why I have to play chaotic because I, as a person, don't keep my feelings on the inside. So it would be very hard to play a character that did that because I couldn't.
The biggest acting challenge of your life. Like,
yeah.
Oh, God. I think there are times in all of this where, you know, both players and listeners have been silently or audibly screaming. I mean, I've heard a lot of superfan Hannah's screams. Personally, you know, within the superfan chats and stuff, she's still going.
Sometimes I listen back to it and I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah. Since we talked about you kind of like playing chaotic characters, this next question that is from me is for you, Vicky. So, Vicky. I don't know why I've written it like that. So, Vicky, as if I've just strolled into this conversation and haven't been here the whole time. Well, now, Vicky. I know that in your real life, you are a highly athletic individual. You are training to be a personal trainer. You do aerials with silks. I think you've had a show green lit for that as well. You do weightlifting, paddleboarding, all of that physical jazz. So does that make it tougher to imagine yourself as a frail little witchy gnome? Does it then affect the decisions that you would want to make in gameplay?
Oh, interesting. I think on one hand, like, I think, yeah, I like being physical and yeah, but I think like, it's almost like it's like another side of me. I think like, So Ardox, who I played in our 7-year bug campaign, was like very physical. She was a barbarian and like, blah. So there was part of me that wanted to go in a different direction. But I think like, I'm so intrigued by all things witchy, chakras, that kind of stuff. So I think she's just like another facet of me. Maybe like a side of my personality that's a bit less like what people know, maybe. I think maybe that. But also like, I feel like I always say this, like Juna is my nan and my grandma. So I think for me, the joy, I don't feel like she's a part of me. I mean, she is because I'm the granddaughter of the two people who she's inspired by, but it's almost like I live her through other people, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Rather than sort of through me.
Mm. Oh, that's really sweet. Yeah. So you're thinking more in that situation of like, because yeah, I do wonder if there's times where you're like, well, like, you know, I would just charge in there, but obviously Juna's not that. So are you able to just kind of like completely distance yourself from your own physical capabilities and just think about like, you know, WWGD, you know, grandma do?
Yeah, I think like there's times when the like the Vicky in me tries to like crawl out. So I think with regards to spoons, Juna is actually quite reserved, whereas the natural Vicky in me would be all over the spoons. She would be walking through the night. I would.
That was something else walking through the night. Yeah, I heard that.
Did everyone else
hear that?
That was
really weird. Yeah.
There's a
should
ghost
I
in the room.
Should I wreck on it or should I just leave that in?
No, keep it.
That was terrifying. I've already had a cat like winding herself around my
ankle.
Is
that what that was? Yeah. Like Sam was deep in a question and I was like, something is happening to Vicky right now. But
yeah. I'm recording from a haunted house tonight. yeah, so we won't retcon it. So yeah, like the spoons, I think there's part of me that would be all like, the particularly the first one that Gwen did, I was like, how would I do in that? And I know when we did, when we were in the Wingthrop maze, particularly the one where we had to work out the metals, that kind of thing. Like, I feel like that's where I can like get a bit of me out and like, I quite enjoy, I love doing all of that. I'm going to ignore the Hellraisers of Camberwell.
Still going on. I'm just expecting a face to appear because it's quite dark behind you as well.
Gosh,
I'm expecting like a ghostly face to appear on the camera.
No.
Oh, don't.
In David's world, it would happen.
Please don't.
That's right. You've got a camera screen. You'll see it coming when we
just
do.
Just a slow smile. Like.
So yeah, like I think there's moments where I can like let my I'm going to just press up with this question. yeah, there's moments I can let my Vicky out. But I think there's so much therapy for me in playing Juna. It's almost like I don't think about the parts of me that she isn't. I just love being Juna. It's almost like if I've had a tough day and I know at the end of the day I'm going to get to be Juna, I'm going to get a good night's sleep and I'm just going to be like, you know?
I mean, it's really interesting how you say that because like I think for a lot of people, Juna is the counselor, kind of, you know, she's the one that makes everyone feel better. So yeah, I'm getting that you kind of like through making everybody feel better and feel comfortable in every scenario, that actually then is your kind of like remedy, stops you silently screaming.
Yeah. yeah. But also, oh, like really I sweet. Say, like I there's something about being Juna that just makes me, I feel like I say this all the time, but like every time I play Juna, it's like I'm with my grandma, who I don't get to see enough, and I'm with my nan. And like, it took me a really long time to grieve the loss of my nan. And like, a big part of that is that like, sorry, I've got really deep suddenly.
I mean,
if my nan's face came up behind me, like that's a ghost I can deal with. But like, I think...
I mean, you might be able to.
Yeah, I won't.
Still freak
I'm
out.
I'm gone. Right? There will be a Sam Shink hole in that wall.
If an adorable 95-year-old woman appears behind me, it's all
lovely
good.
Seeing her, but that is the end of the recording for me. Like.
But yeah, like there's something really good about like dealing with grief through sort of a creative outlet. And I encourage people to create a D&D character that can help you move through your grief and trauma, because, yeah, it's just really nice to sort of feel like I've got part of her still with me.
Yeah.
And particularly because June is a bit sort of spiritual and stuff, that kind of really helps.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a happy accident, yeah.
And she's just so forgiving, unless it's Dwayne. Like, you know, and I say that, she forgave Dwayne in an instant. She had her moment and then she's like, I can't
like, I need to share this frustration, but then, yeah. Okay, we're cool, good.
You kind of don't have a choice with Dwayne, do you?
I should also do one of those soft retcons and say, you know, because I said that, you know, Juno isn't really athletic, but she did like burst through a window on a broomstick. Which was totally badass. And she is trying to do athletic things. Yeah, I just thought it was interesting that you've built this character as a, you know, homage to your grandparents and not really focusing on those, like, you know, really kind of athletic attributes within yourself.
I get that out of my system every day.
Yeah.
Like, I come to you on this recording fresh off an aerial rig. Like, you can't see this if you're listening to it, but I currently have a heart on my face because I've been a card from Alice in Wonderland hanging off an aerial silk this afternoon. So I get all of that out of my system in real life.
I thought that was for us. It's really
it is,
nice.
Sam.
I was like, I want to make one.
It is.
Right, yeah. Okay,
sure,
cool.
Sure.
We'll keep that in. Okay, thank you so much for answering that so honestly, Vicky. We'll have a question for you both now. This is from Pippa, and I'm going to ask a question for her today. So if you could spend a day in any town or city in Dravaine for real, where would you go? And what would you get up to?
Ah, that's a good question.
David, do you wanna jump in on this one first? If you've got an answer.
Is it one that we've seen, or can it be one that we haven't seen in the podcast?
Ooh, I'm going to say...
Because I feel like I can say, like, oh, I built the map, I know.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's both.
Both?
I'm going to say you're allowed the last one, but this is also really intriguing for us because... You won't choose the cities where really evil things are happening, so...
You don't know that. I'm really torn. I'm torn between three. Medravane.
How many places have we been? Yeah.
Medravane, I'd really like... I don't know, like, in my head, I really like its vibe. Half of it's on fire at the moment. They should probably put that out. But the kind of, like...
Night out on frosting?
Yeah, that it's, like... almost like a river city, but it's kind of like as a through trade town because of the way it connects the river sort of leading off toward the Torbear Bog and like the northern end of Dravaine, but then also into Lake Dravaine. So it's like still fairly central historically to the whole country. So Medravane is pretty cool.
Yeah, because what would you like to do when you're there? Are we talking like, would you take a boat all the way down?
Yeah, go for
that
a little sail.
Yeah,
like, right. Just, you know, drinking establishments. I don't know. I just, in my head, I like its vibe. I don't know how to describe that. It's got a cool vibe. The other two that I am torn between haven't been seen in the podcast, but they have both been mentioned. One of them is Carth, which is, in my head, just Bath. It's
where
just
did
like,
you get the name?
That's... I couldn't tell you. Oh, I'm very creative sometimes. But in that kind of like Austin-esque, like, oh, we go to take the waters and like everyone's like there's just an air of like sensibility around the place. And like people take promenades around town and like that kind of like, it's a bit of a show to be in Carth. That's what I like, the visuals I get from it. The other one is Hushben. Ben's just put in the chat, David's NPC names can be legendarily creative.
Oh my god, I thought you were saying you wanted to go to a place called Hushben, and now I feel like a place called Hushben needs to be invented on the map.
Isn't that near Splinter Falls? Yeah, I forget.
Yeah. Hushben. Yeah. No, so the other off-mic place that I'd like to go is Dram, which is where Enkidu is from. I have actually played a game with my family in Dram, like the one D&D game that we've all played together. Was set in Dram, so I've got a map for it, and it's a fun little place, lots of like seedy underbelly, but also like busy hustle bustle of the city happening.
Interesting. Has that changed much, by the way, from like your original concept to what it is in this world?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, cool.
Largely in having Daryl's input.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, with everybody I've said, oh, whatever it is that you want to make up and we'll fit it into the world. And Daryl is incredibly creative.
Yeah.
I mean, you should read his multi-page backstories. Plural. They are... I love him. I really love him. I cannot get enough of him. And so, yeah, he's, like, invented parts of Dram and that. So, again, like, to fit in with things that happened in his backstory, I've got an even greater understanding of what that place is. And it is so far south, I don't know how the party are going to get there, if they're going to get there. But... it's really fun. We'll have to do a game there at some point.
They need like the Wayward Door or something like that sends you somewhere else.
Sends you crazy places. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. And I know how descriptive Daryl can be because, you know, obviously we played his game that he set in the city of Tenabula and just the amount of detail that he manages to pour into scene. Yeah. And like obviously Candlekeep as well, where he wasn't necessarily using his own words, but he was embellishing them sometimes with his... kind of descriptive nature. Yeah, I wouldn't put it past Daryl to give you how many pages was it?
I couldn't even guess. I want to say 15. I don't think it was 15. I think in my head that is like it's been exaggerated over time and I'm like, oh, it's 15.
Front and back.
What about you, Vicky? Where would you go?
I want to go to Heart of Springmas at Vernock Rise. It was so lovely. I think that would just be like really great.
Yeah.
And plant your flowers, which were flowering the last time that you were there. That was just really sweet.
Yeah. I think that would just be a really fun thing to do. But outside of places we've been, I'd love to go to Hushben, obviously. But like, I think it'd be cool to go... Do the Carbon Mountains exist in this game?
Ooh. They do. I mean, they are north of the world and you're as far south as really as you can get.
Yeah. The Carbon Mountains is where the Dragonborns all live. I think it'd be really cool. It's rumoured that there's diamonds, but the Dragonborns maintain that there's not. I think that would just be a really cool place to explore. Also, I love me some Dragonborns.
Yeah, hence, you know, my Astanis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think Splinter Falls, I think, would be a cool place to go. I think there'd be a lot going on. Yeah.
I mean, I'm hoping that a lot of these places we will get to. I mean, are there spoons in Splinter Falls? Because that will be the only way that you get them there. Put 10 spoons in Dram and watch them all run.
Yeah.
That's right. So I'm trying to drive everyone to Splinter Falls at any given opportunity. So
Well, Ben said here that he'd quite like to go back to the Woden Isles, but I think that's only in your games there, Ben. You should just write another one of those. That'd be a good idea. Yeah.
I'd like to go to Sulmarath, personally. I think, like, because I imagined it, because that's where Juna's from, I think I imagine it all, like, foresty and stuff like that. So it'd be cool to go and...
Oh, do you?
What? She's a forest gnome. She must be from the forest.
Yeah.
Screw it. I invented Juna. That's where she's from.
I think I'd love to go to the Feywilds, actually, and just chill out with some singing flowers or something.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
After the latest episode?
Well,
Volpdinger.
Goddamn Russell.
Oh my God. Brilliant. Brilliant question there, Pip. We've got a little bit of immense. I really want to go to Carth. Is that spelled with a C, by the way? Was it
spelled
that?
Spelled with a C, yeah. Right. C-A-R with an R in there.
Oh, there's
as well.
An R. Okay.
Yeah.
Carth.
It's like cart with a H at the end.
I really want to go there now because I've just finished watching Bridgerton and, you know, obviously, you know, chatting about promenades and everything, which obviously filmed in the gorgeous city of Bath.
It's beautiful, isn't it? Yeah, if you've watched Bridgerton, you've been to Carth. Well done.
Okay, I'm from Carth. Okay, sorry, right, moving on. David, let's have a question for you. And Tiamat, if you are still standing by, I'm going to pass it back over to you.
Hello again.
Hey, yo.
So with the further adventures of Dwayne Fabulosa being released, is there any possibility for further adventures of Deacon and Alfie?
Please.
Yes, please.
Yes. Yeah,
yes.
Definitely. Yeah, we've not recorded them yet, but 100% I want them. I want them. They're happening. It was so much fun recording the Dwayne episodes. A little 4-episode mini arc just to be like, oh, cool, what's he doing next? A little bit more world building, like keep him established in there. We got to play with Jasper, and God,
he's
fell in love
so
with the man,
isn't he?
Yeah.
Jasper William Cartwright, you are a god.
And yeah, again, it's that same feeling that we had with Robbie. it was such a short time to play with them for just two episodes. It's like, but I want more Robbie in my life. So the only way to do that, we just have to have them back. That's it. We have to have them back. And considering the party have gone south and Alfie has gone north-ish, we don't really know where Alfie's gone. But that means that they could end up anywhere. And that's even more fun.
Alfie's gone to meet Ginger and is coming back with Ginger.
Well, more my thinking. Like, the only thought that I've really had is that there are two other artificer girls wandering off. So it would be really helpful if they had a bit of guide, even if that was the little bit of chaos that was Alfie.
Oh my God, yes. Does that mean, though, that you'd need somebody to play Kerosene and Myra, or
Kerosene and Myra?
Kerosene, sorry. I don't know. Called a kerosene.
Kerosene.
it's all
she's
the fire.
It's more aggressive.
Alfie that likes to burn things, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. So I've not fleshed out anything else other than that. So whether or not it is other people taking those characters, whether I take those characters,
you have to be Myra.
Yeah.
But 100%. Like, I want them back. Deacon's gone off north on his own adventure, hunting out the warrior. Is that what it was called?
Yeah,
the
it was
compass,
the compass leading to the warrior.
The warrior. So, like, there's lots of stuff and their own little storylines that they can carry on. That, yeah, if we can't get to it in the main campaign, then 100% we're going to get to it in extra bonus stuff.
Oh my God, you should invite somebody else from like Flintlocks and Fireballs to come in and help out with that. I mean, it worked with Jasper being in Three Black Halflings with Jeremy. That dynamic was already established. And then, you know,
more
obviously
friends.
Without giving too much away
more
to
friends,
everyone,
more friends.
No small roles like interact with it as well. Oh, it's just such a good series. Great question there, Tiamma.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. Because I do miss Deacon. I loved Deacon when they were on.
Yeah.
Me too. Yeah, me too. And Sarah, like, we're going to be seeing, Sarah's going to be working with us over the summer. So, like, the excitement of just spending time with Sarah even then.
Yeah. David's talking about spending more time with, like, Jasper and Robbie. It's only because we see Sarah quite a lot. Anyway.
It is the joy, isn't it? I mean, there's always more time for more friends in life.
Make it happen. Here are my demands.
And if we don't have free time, then at the very least, we can have semi-professional time and play games with each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, you can send these characters to the places that the party aren't going to get to.
That's
send them
true,
places
actually.
That there aren't spoons or, you know, evil things going on.
Yeah, and that was part of the fun of... I know Dwayne only just... Oh, this is coming out before... Okay, I'm not going to say what I was about to say. This comes out before the Dwayne episodes do.
Ooh, okay.
Nothing. I was just going to say that the location that the further adventures of Dwayne Fabulosa are set is somewhere that hasn't been explored at all by the party. So it was really nice to just dip our toe into that area of the world.
Okay, this is he's covering stuff up here. That's juicy.
And that's what I'm going to say. And I'm going to stop talking before I do give more juice.
If it makes you feel better, I was there and I don't know what he's talking about. It's that cryptic.
If anyone picked up on any of that, well done.
David silently screaming because they didn't pick up on something. cheers, Tiamma.
No problem. Thanks.
Thanks for the question.
Okay. I think we could probably just squeeze in one last question. So it is for both of you from Karen, who has asked, which party member would be a great big spoon or little spoon in a cuddle?
Oh my gosh.
Gwen would be the best big spoon.
Gwen has
nice.
To be, yeah.
I would let Gwen big spoon me whenever she wanted.
Would Gwen want to be big spoon?
I think she'd try and be little, but she would be a great big spoon.
Okay, so we've got big spoon, little spoon.
I feel like just in size, Gwen big spoon, June a little spoon, because like June is small and cuddly, Gwen is big and cuddly. So between the two of them, you're getting the best of both worlds.
I kind of feel like Oren would be, but like, would hate being the little spoon.
Yeah.
And
really?
That would make it even better. Yeah, he'd be like, oh, God, no. I don't want to be the little spoon.
I think there'd be something adorable about little spooning in Kidu. He'd resist it. He'd be like, no.
Too much pride.
But too much pride. Yeah. It's like, come on, Enkidu.
And I feel like Gaius then has like the bravado that you want out of a big spoon. Like he's gonna go straight in there and like scoop you up because he's got the chops for it. And then he'd probably sing into your ear, and that would be cool.
So basically, we've been really diplomatic and said everyone.
Everybody. So this is a question. In the wing thruple, how is the order of the spooning happening?
Oh.
Ooh.
Gwen, Guy, Juna.
Nice.
That's a good then, spoon.
Yeah. Right,
oh, which then makes
Guy,
sense.
Guy, is that your pipe?
No, don't move it.
Brilliant. Oh god. But then
the image of Orin being the big spoon to Enkidu is just adorable.
Yeah. But I think that's the way it would be.
That's the way it would be.
Oh man.
Oh, I'm in love.
What about Aggie and Ruana? Who would be the big spoon and who would be the little spoon?
I imagine. It depends on Ruana's form, but I imagine that she is small and climbs almost semi inside.
Mm.
No, sorry, Ruana, yeah, climbs inside Aggie. Wait, because let me start all that again. Ruana, depending
Ben
on
Ben is rubbing
form,
his eyes under his glasses and shaking his head.
Yeah, if Ruana is like mouse bird Ruana and then is like inside the teapot of Aggie, like being all cuddled up in there, that's why.
That is nice.
Like a dormouse. Yeah.
Like a little dormouse in a teapot.
Yeah.
I kind of thought of, like, you know, this you know, baby owlbear, which the form that Ruana is in at this point anyway, like, kind of makes, like, the cuddly toy element that could go anywhere within the spoon, really, you know.
Yeah.
Can shift it
and
around
could also somebody just sort of latch on behind you as well.
Aww.
That's a nice question to finish
That's
on.
That's a really nice one to end on, isn't it?
We didn't really give you an answer, but it's a really nice question to finish on.
I don't know. There are definitely answers in there. I think we've established the wing thruple angle anyway. Yeah. That's canon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should mention that Ben has actually put in the chat here about the last question that, yes, the patrons at this point have heard episodes 1 and 2 of the Dwayne Fabulosa arc.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly, if you're not a patron, this is a genuine reason to go for it, because I wouldn't want to wait for these episodes. They are so good. I'm not just saying that. They are so good. They're wonderfully performed. And also, like, they are, like, particularly Jeremy and Jasper are so on it with the rules and the mechanics in a way that, like, yeah. It's just, you just run with it. You know, whatever they say is gospel, and like the play moves so quickly. The way they think about how to use those mechanics, their advantage as well,
so
is
creative.
Insane.
It's so much fun. Yeah.
So yeah, if you haven't signed up to the Patreon, that would be a reason to go and do it, honestly. Plus, you get to come and hang out with us here.
Hang, chill.
But anyway, that's a little plug of the Patreon there.
And do come and hang out with us. It's nice to meet everyone.
Yeah, please do. Come join us in the Discord. Really good community of people in there. And we have a lot of fun. There's all sorts of different chats, different channels. And you don't have to be a patron to actually come along and enjoy that. Give that a think. But all that being said,
don't give it a think. Give it a do.
Download Discord. Go do it. I think that's all we've got time for right now. Mahusif thank you to Vicky and to David. All the patrons in the chat and the crumpets who show this podcast just so much love.
Thank you. And thank you, Sam.
Oh, no, thank you for having me all the time. Love doing it. Right, I think there's only one thing left to say. So if everyone could unmute themselves.
It's the full phrase.
Always worth clarifying.
Yeah, right.
Anon-Munda.
Hello there, big spoons, little spoons, and teaspoons. Ben here, popping in to say thank you to our guests this week, Vicky and David, and to superfan Sam Oakes for putting the questions to the cast. Oh, and I hope you've been enjoying our recent episode art as well, which has been featuring some of Sam's fantastic cast photos too. Thanks for lending us your multi-talented skills, Sam. Huge thank you to everyone for sending in your thought-provoking questions for this episode. Now, if you want to theorise further about upcoming events or let us know which city in Dravain you'd want to visit, then you need to head on over to our Discord. To be totally honest, I had very little idea what or who a Discord was,
before we set up our No Small Roll server, but it has been a delight to be part of our growing community of listeners and fellow D&D nerds. And if you're new to Discord as well, the great news is it's completely free to sign up. All you need to do is click on the link in the show notes, or you can follow the link from the No Small Roles website, and then Discord will just guide you through the next steps to create an account and join the chat. Now, next on the feed, we're going to be taking a little break from the main campaign as we delve into the further adventures of Dwayne Fabulosa. We are so delighted that Jeremy Cobb will be returning to play the Blue-Haired Bard himself, alongside our very special guest, Jasper William Cartwright, who many of you might know already from the brilliant Three Black Halflings podcast. Now, if you're not subscribed to them already, what are you doing? Go and do that now. Okay, now you're back from subscribing. Jeremy and Jasper will be appearing alongside the rest of the No Small Roles cast in this four-part adventure, DM'd and composed musically by our very own David Knight. The first episode will be released on Sunday, the 15th of May, and the next three episodes will release throughout May and June. However, if you just can't wait until then, and I really can't blame you if you can't, then do check out our Patreon, where our teacup, teapot, and tea caddy supporters can already binge the first two episodes. Just click the link in the show notes below or visit patreon.com/no small roles to sign up for those and, well, just a whole heap of other benefits. We'll be back to the main storyline in July. And in the meantime, I'm off to look for the town of Hushben on this map of Dravain. Must be really small. I can't see it anywhere. Anyway, and on for now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.